people have powerful feelings about the traffic in Los Angeles, it says something that local officials warned motorists about a temporary road work closure on the 405 last year by calling it Carmageddon. Angelenos took the hint, and this weekend they're expected to steer clear of the latest 405 closure, named, of course, Carmageddon 2. That's how it is in L.A., a snarl of overstuffed freeways and commuters who keep their cool, except when they don't. KPCC's Stephen Cuevas has this profile of a punk rocker whose music expresses the insanity of L.A. traffic while extolling the virtues of public transit.
Couple of things you need to know about Eddie Solis. He lives in L.A., loves the band Kiss, and does not own a car.
Being someone who's from L.A., born and raised, and, you know, having a few cars in my past, I saw the city much differently through a different perspective through the eyes of a bus rider.
Want to just go all the way to the back?
Sure. Line 18, Wilshire Western Station.
Just steps from the front door of his home. Across the street from a tortilla factory in L.A.'s Boyle Heights neighborhood, Solis catches a bus that connects him with the city's subway and the commuter train he catches to his day job at an indie record label in Hollywood.
It just opened me up to, like, little neighborhoods, galleries, clubs, bars, just everything. Just seeing what's out there, little pockets of the city.
Solis's journeys aboard L.A. buses and subway cars informs a lot of the material on The New Los Angeles Part 1, Through the Eyes of a Bus Rider, the latest release by the singer-guitarist band It's Casual. In Solis's vision of a new Los Angeles, people abandon their cars, climb aboard public transit, and rediscover their communities. One song extols the virtues of the L.A. County Metropolitan Transit Agency's Easy Pass and the urban underbelly it introduces to the rider.
And that's a nod and homage to, you know, the people who know what you can even go cheaper and really beat the system and really steer away from spending money on gas and oil profits and all that. Is all it takes for me to witness racial tension, for me to witness illegal aliens. It's not to paint a negative picture, it's just my perspective of what is seen.
Off the bus and back on the street, we make our way past a jazz saxophonist playing for pocket change and down a long escalator to catch a train.
So, where are we now?
We're at the Red Line station, the Pershing Square station in downtown L.A.
And what's our destination?
We're going to go downstairs another tier, and about 5 minutes, we're going to get on the Red Line going northbound.
Okay, yeah. Let's go.
The Metro Red Line snakes from North Hollywood to downtown Los Angeles. It's the train that inspired It's Casual's signature tune and spawned a viral internet video. It was partly filmed late at night on a moving train as it hurtles from station to station. Solis thrashes away on his guitar and barks the lyrics, which celebrate the Red Line and call out the congested freeways that coil around Los Angeles.
Este es un tren de Metro Red Line a North Hollywood.
The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the 210, the freeways are not so nice.
The thread that comes out of the record that ties everyone together is just like, be alive, don't be a victim of having a car.
An MTA spokesman said he couldn't comment on Eddie Solis's furious pro-Metro message, but the Red Line video was a hit at the offices of Move LA.
Eddie's done a good job. Thank you, Eddie.
It's the public transportation advocacy group headed by former Santa Monica Mayor Denny Zane. He liked the juxtaposition of Solis blissfully riding L.A. public transit in one scene with scenes of the band raging against those notorious freeway jams.
Eddie is all frantic when he talks about highways. And so mellow when he's like grooving on a skateboard and on the bus and on the Red Line, there's a metaphor for the transformation, you know, from the, oh my God, I just got to get out of the traffic to, hey, this is cool. I can mellow out.
Or you can blast the tune like Too Many People as you claw your way across Los Angeles by car, bus, or skateboard.
There's too many people. I want them to go away. Even though they think they're so afraid.
Too Many People could also be a motto for It's Casual. Over the years, the band whittled itself down to a power duo of Solis and a rotating cast of drummers. So you may think the burly, bearded punk rocker just can't get along with freeways, with people, or his native L.A. Not true.
I love it. I love everything about it. I've traveled throughout the U.S. many times, and I could never look forward enough to coming back. The weather, the different cultures, the landscape. I was just like, you know what? Now I know why everyone moves to L.A.
Solis will bring the love and the volume during a Red Line mini tour next month. It's Casual will play a different venue within walking distance of several Red Line metro stops from Union Station to West Hollywood. For the California Report, I'm Stephen Cuevas.
I want my driver's license back.
That's the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our director this week is Nina Thorson. Seal Muller is our technical producer. We had additional engineering from Danny Bringer and Howard Gelman. Thanks to Hank Hadley at KCBX. Our online team includes Lisa Pickoff-White, David Marks, and Don Clyde. Our interns are Catherine Borgeson and Rachel Johnson. Tyke Hendricks is our elections editor with production help from Tina Lauerberg. We had editing support from Paul Rogers. Victoria Malione is our associate senior producer. Ingrid Becker is our senior producer. The news director is Bruce Kuhn. I'm Rachel Miro. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995, and the California Endowment. Health happens in schools at calendow.org, and Chevron, investing in renewables, strengthening communities, and creating jobs. More information at chevron.com.
The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the 210, the freeways are not so nice. The 101, the 405, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the I-10, the freeways are not so nice. The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the I-10.
Welcome back to the 85th episode of Los Angeles Nista. It's a downtown Los Angeles episode with my in-studio guest, Mr. Gene Troutman. How are you, sir?
I'm good.
Man, thanks for making it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you trekked pretty far. I wanted to...
all the way from Sherman Oaks.
The valley, right?
Yes.
And that's definitely, you know, geographically, it's not close.
No, not geographically, but you know, everything's like 20 minutes away by car.
Without traffic.
Unless there's traffic.
Absolutely right. You know, for a long time, I've, you know, seen your drumming, and I wanted to ask you, you know, for someone like you that's been drumming as long as you have and have played with many different musicians and have been on many different platforms around the world, I wanted to ask you, when did you commit to this instrument?
Well, let's see. I was probably about 9 years old, and there was like this sort of watershed moment on television. I was a TV baby, you know, like watched TV all the time, and an only child, kind of a latchkey guy. And there it was this watershed moment where there was a lot of different entertainment specials. Like there was the Carpenter special, there was the Kiss Halloween special, there was the
Paul Lynde and Kiss
special,
right?
Yeah. And that all happened in 76, right around the beginning of the TV season. So like September, October, November. And, so I saw Kiss, and that like I couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was like nothing I'd ever seen before. And then the Sid Marty Krofft characters that were around that TV show kind of like took me out of my childhood and, you know, placed me in front of Kiss, you know.
Right.
And then the Carpenters had this special where Karen Carpenter was doing this drum solo. You can YouTube it, actually.
Okay.
She's doing this drum solo on a soundstage, and she's jumping from xylophone to drums to congas to...
Whoa.
And she's a badass. I mean, she has, like, amazing rhythm. She's a really talented woman on top of her singing and songwriting. And so seeing that, and then the Osmonds had, like, a special, and the Osmond brother that played the drums, I can't remember his name, but... He was like, you know, if this is my show, I'd host it like this. And he's like playing drums and talking. And it was all really kind of amazing to me. And I knew at that point somehow I was gonna do that. And I didn't, you know. So I told my dad, and he's like, well, you know, I'll get you a pair of drumsticks and we can go down to the drum store. And I got a catalog, and I looked at this Ludwig catalog, and I saw all these massive like drum sets and started drawing them and like visualizing them.
Wow.
And I just, you know, just sort of in earnest would like listen to the radio and play along on the sticks. And I mean, eventually they got me this like Sears and Roebuck kind of tin drum set with those Tyvek tear-proof paper drum heads.
The paper, you know? Drum heads, yeah.
And I, you know, I pounded on those for a while, and that, you know, didn't last for that long. And finally, you know, I got a pawn shop kit, and you know, one thing led to another. I started taking lessons and building it up.
And evolved.
Yeah.
I got to ask you, as a big Kiss fan myself, what is your favorite Kiss record? As a drummer. For me, as a drummer,
I can't say that I have any favorites.
not Creatures
love you,
of the
Peter
Night?
Chris. But, you know, I guess, you know, Destroyer, you know.
The
songs are really great on Destroyer. I think a lot of those songs aren't even theirs. Like, they were, like, written by other songwriters.
Well, they're all
ghost writers.
Yeah, there's a lot of
Kim
Fowley.
Yeah,
you know.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. We could get into Kiss.
but I'd say that one and Alive were the two ones. Like Alive, especially because like it. What is it? 100,000 years or whatever.
The drum solo.
You know, it was kind of like the Inagata DeVita of our generation.
Right.
You know.
Right.
The generation before us, really.
You remember your first band you played in?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. Yeah, I do. It's all very embarrassing. we were called Fuck Chuck and the Reefers.
Okay.
And the bass player's name was Chuck, and he was always late. So that's whenever he'd show up, he'd be like, "Fuck, Chuck." But he, you know, was in the band because he had the reefer. So, you know, that
he was holding.
Yeah.
There you go.
I don't know if we can. Are we allowed to?
We could do
that?
Anything we want here. So.
But yeah, so that was kind of the deal there. And then, like, you know, I was always kind of playing with people that were older than me.
Wow.
And then I joined this band, the Miracle Workers, which was like, they were a bunch of 20-year-olds, and I was still in high school. And, we started gigging out, and they were a Paisley Underground kind of band that we were doing covers by the Sonics and them and the Leaves and stuff like that, and original material and stuff. And that's what actually brought me eventually brought me down to Los Angeles, because that the band, we kind of started getting a little arrogant, thinking that we were a big fish in a little pond, you know. And we thought we'd come down to LA where it was kind of more happening. You know, there was Bump Records, Greg Shaw, the Pandoras were playing, Red Cross was going off, you know.
And right.
So we wanted to get involved in that. We decided to record a record down here. We got signed to Bump, came down, did a recording, and that was kind of like our, you know, we realized that that's where we had to go, is come down here.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's where the industry is, right? Yeah. Even if you wanted any kind of music,
yep,
it's all here. Now, when you had your first record, how was that feeling when you held it?
It was pretty amazing. You know, I really thought, I mean, I was I was pissed about the color of the record, and I thought my photo was terrible. So, like, immediately, disappointed by the music business. But it was great. It was so amazing. Like, it kind of changed. It really kind of crystallized. It was kind of one of those moments. I don't know if that's where you're leading, but, like, definitely, like, that was one of those commitment moments, you know,
right,
where you had
an
the record
moment
in your hand. It was definitely like you have that record in your hand. You're like, wow, I'm like, I think I'm famous now, right? Like, oh my God, I've got a record.
And you were inspired from that. And that filled you for the next, you know, few years until the next thing happened,
yeah,
right?
For sure.
How did you end up in Queens of the Stone Age?
Well, it was through that band, Miracle Workers. When we moved to Los Angeles, we started playing regularly at Raji's.
Wow.
Which is in Hollywood, mm-hmm, up on Hollywood Boulevard, kind of across from, it's like, I guess it was between Gower and Argyle-ish on Hollywood Boulevard, I think. And there was a house sound guy there named Hutch, and he's a really great sound guy, and he was originally from Canada and had this background, punk rock background, touring with DOA and stuff. And so we were playing there live a lot, and I got to know Hutch, and he went to Europe with Miracle Workers a couple of times, and we solidified our relationship. And, you know, I got out of that band, and different things happened, and time went by. But Hutch, my relationship with Hutch continued, and then he started doing sound for Caius eventually. Mm-hmm. And then that turned into sort of the Gamma Ray sessions, and Dave Ketching. I met Dave Ketching through Hutch. And Dave was playing in Queens of the Stone Age as well at the time. And even actually before that, there was the Gamma Ray sessions that Josh was developing for Queens of the Stone Age out of what was Caius. And so I was kind of involved in a little bit through all that stuff, through Hutch and Dave. Really, like, Hutch and Dave are kind of, they were my anchor points to get doing anything of any real depth and weight in music, I think. I still credit those two guys as being.
That's like, great. That's
and
great.
Josh eventually, as a result of that, Josh Homme was really instrumental in, you know, any of the good stuff that I've had in my music career has been as a result of that.
That's great. I mean, you know, for me, as a big music fan, I remember seeing you on stage on the Foo Fighters tour with Queens here in LA.
Oh, right. At the Universal Amphitheater.
Yeah, that was a fantastic show.
That was a really great show.
And you guys played venues that size throughout the whole tour, really, right?
Yeah, we were really fortunate. Dave Grohl gave us that tour and that support. Yeah, I mean, he was a fan, I think, of Caius even before that, and there had even been talk, I think, of him doing some work with Queens as the drummer at some point for songs or some work on an album even before that. But he wasn't able to get on the Rated R record, and so that's when later on. He became involved with them as a result of during the Songs for the Deaf record.
Right, right. I'm really interested in hearing the music you brought today.
Oh, cool.
You're playing drums on this record. A few songs we're going to hear, or a song. You are in a new band, and it's called?
Drag News. The Drag News.
The Drag News. Yeah. Killer. Let's hear a track from that.
There's a picture of it right there.
Yeah, there you go. I love it.
and I think we're going to play, maybe we'll play Frankie's Bike, which is the second song.
Let's do it.
We're using it.
Welcome back to Los Angeles Nista. I'm your host, Edward Solis. My in-studio guest is Gene Troutman for the 85th episode. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Eddie.
Yeah, you've been around the world and around the country many of times, and you are an Angeleno, and this is Los Angeles Nista, so I have to know, where do you like to go visit when you're in town, like eating and all that good stuff?
Well, you know, I like to eat. I like food. When I'm downtown, you know, I move around the city a lot, you know, and I get to eat around the city a lot. And there's, LA is a great town for food.
Totally.
And when you talked to me about doing this, I was kind of thinking about the downtown area.
Yep.
Because I have this studio, or I had the studio at Downtown Rehearsals for about 10 years. I just recently moved to Sherman Oaks, where I'm teaching drums.
Fantastic.
And recording. But so I spent a lot of time downtown over these years, and also working in the film business, you move around and do stuff. And like in Chinatown, there's like an amazing restaurant for pho called Pho 87.
Pho 87.
Which I like a lot. And that's on Broadway, on the north edge of town.
You know what's awesome about that is that now there's a Gold Line rail system. You can
get there very easily.
Easily for $1.50 if you don't have a pass from East LA or Union Station or Pasadena. So yep. 87.
And that's 1019 North Broadway.
That's awesome.
And then if you're in Chinatown and you get off there and you decide, I don't want to have Chinese food, I'm feeling like something else, you can go to the Spring Street Barbecue, which is really good.
That's killer. I know that place.
You know that place, yeah. Right? That's good. That's on 640 North Spring. And if you're in the Boyle Heights neighborhood.
Yeah.
And it's late night. There's this bitchin' taco truck that's on the corner of Soto and 7th Street at the car wash there. I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's always a line. And, they have amazing tacos.
You like that spot.
I love that spot. I don't know.
Do you like
that spot?
I'm so close to there. I live so close to there.
But you don't necessarily know when they're going to show up. Like it's, you know, usually when it's dark, usually around bar time, you know, like they're
right. They roll up and all of a sudden, like I'm coming off, you know, like a bus or the freeway from like a gig, going to see bands. And I get off and like, there's a huge line right when you make a right. Yeah. And you see like the cops are in line too. They're like, they're there to eat.
Yeah. But it's always a good sign, you know, when if the cops are there.
Yeah, exactly.
They eat a lot. And as far as tacos as well, I mean, there's the old Standby King Taco on Cesar Chavez. That's
classic.
I love that place, man.
Anything you get there is going to be so good.
Yep.
Burrito or taco, right?
Yep. And it's cheap and it's fresh. And so I love
and that. You can really tell the ingredients are fresh, the meats and everything.
Totally, man. I mean, there's always, when there's such a big turnaround like that, it's always going to be good. And then like downtown, actually not too far from here, for coffee, Tierra Mia Cafe on Spring Street.
Yeah.
I like that place. That's independently owned, and they have really unusual roasts and coffee selections.
That's great. I want to know more about your drum lessons.
Well, you know, I started doing it to kind of keep my hand in it when I was kind of going through a period where I wasn't playing.
Okay.
Where I was doing more work in film and TV, and I wasn't playing as much. I kind of took a break after I stopped playing in Queens. And so that was kind of my way to get back into drumming, was to give back a little bit and
That's
help
awesome.
Others to drum. You know, it was my way of kind of finding a new way to love what I was doing. And so I started teaching, and I started teaching adults. I didn't really start teaching kids until more recently, but I took on like 4 or 5 students and just started helping, you know, people who had always wanted to play the drums learn how to play along to the songs that they like to play, and, you know, kind of take it from a rudimental approach and teach them how to read and, you know, do the kinds of things that my drum teacher did for me, but maybe in a way that's a little less showy, you know, because sometimes you take lessons from people and they're just like, wheedly, wheedly, check me out.
Yeah.
Look at me. Josh used to always say, like, do the, look at me. You know, so instead of doing that, like, you know, help people to find a solution-based approach to learning and stuff.
Very cool. So are you taking on students, or is there a way people could contact you?
Yeah. People can email me at drumsonfire@mac.com.
Perfect.
And that's usually the fastest way to get a hold of me.
All right.
And be happy to talk to them about that.
Well, that's a wrap, Gene. Thank you so much.
Eddie, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
I appreciate you coming.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
Yeah.
Start the intro.
On the way to Island Park.